This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Katie Wyatt remembers the moment she fell in love with classical music. She was in the third grade and had joined her school's orchestra. She played the viola and instantly felt the joy of being part of something larger than herself. Katie grew up in a military family, so she moved around a lot, and playing music kept her plugged into her communities. She studied viola in college and eventually traveled the world with various orchestras. When she was in her early 20s, Katie performed with the Youth Orchestra of the Americas. And that's where she was introduced to the El Sistema program in Venezuela. El Sistema offers classical music training for children whose economic circumstances might otherwise make it hard for them to participate. After learning about El Sistema, Katie was inspired to create something similar back home. And in 2010, Katie co-founded Kids Notes. The Triangle-based program works with public schools to recruit children for classical music training. Today, Katie Wyatt is executive director of El Sistema USA, and she helps support programs like Kids Notes all across the country. And she joins me now on the program. Welcome back, Katie Wyatt. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Really happy to be here.
It has been quite a journey so far. Let's talk about your upbringing and falling in love with classical music. Tell me more about that.
Well, it was nice to hear you provide the introduction. It was in the third grade at Thomas Pullen Elementary School. It was a magnet school in PG County, and my parents actually spent the night.
That's up in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And my parents actually spent the night in the CAP Center, sleeping in a tent in order to get us into this public magnet school. It was an amazing time. I went to school with people who went on to become movie producers and filmmakers and a lot of really creative young people in a time when the arts was crucial and vital to a young person's education in the public school system.
You were in the third grade, obviously very important for your parents to get you in there. How about to you at the time? I mean, did that sort of make any sense to you? Did you know about the arts and want to be part of this before you got to that school?
I knew. No, I don't think so. I think the school being introduced to the arts in school was a big eye-opening moment for me. And what it did was really make me feel special. I felt like I could express myself in a way that I had not quite grasped before. And it also gave me a chance to really shine in a way that, you know, sometimes can get lost in a big classroom or in a big community. It allowed me to have my own unique voice and unique way of stepping out.
A unique voice in a communal setting, an orchestra. So
absolutely,
you're part of something larger, and yet you've got something that is also portable. And as a military kid, that must have been important to you, was it?
Hugely so. The viola was really my ticket to meeting new people. For me, playing in orchestra was always a social activity. I was always looking around trying to gesture to my friends or play into a phrase and catch their eye and laugh or challenge them in some way through the music. It was always about something much bigger than just me, and definitely about building relationships and having a great time.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about the unique qualities in the sense of really your personal stamp on something that felt good to you because it was bigger than you at the same time. Why viola? Is that something you chose right from the start?
It was because my younger sister played violin. Uh-huh. And so I'm pretty tall now, and we joke that I have go-go gadget arms. I have very long arms. And so the viola was the perfect instrument for me. In the third grade, I was the tallest girl in my class. And also, violists have a particular character to them. They're a little bit dramatic, a little bit outside the box. There are a lot of viola jokes. I don't know if you have any teed up.
I know.
Right now.
Mostly
but,
drummers and accordion and banjo,
my gosh.
Sadly. But so even more diva than first chair violin? I would think that's diva.
Oh,
diva
no. Diva. The viola is definitely not diva. The viola is the black sheep of the orchestra. The viola is the outsider alternative instrument, which was definitely me in high school with purple hair and playing viola in a punk rock band.
There you go. Well, what about you? Have two sisters, in fact. And were you? Did they have a shared music and a shared interest in music?
Yes, my sister Karen is in the second violin section in the Utah Symphony. She's playing professionally now, and she and I really had a wonderful opportunity to grow up together in music. We were always in the same orchestra. We went to Indiana University together and then on to the New World Symphony together, too. So played together for a long, long time.
Tell us about moving to Belgium. You did that when you your family moved there when you were a teenager, right?
Yes, and I went kicking and screaming. We moved when I was 14, so I had just finished my freshman year of high school and so had friends and thought I had my life all planned out in my, you know, small community in Bowie, Maryland. But then, of course, when we arrived in Belgium, my mother had the foresight to make sure that we all were kind of blown away from the get-go. And so we get there, and within 24 hours, she put the whole family on a bus tour of Italy. And I saw Venice, Naples, Rome, Pompeii, five or six cities in Italy within 24 hours of setting foot in Europe.
Well, now, see, there's two ways you can interpret that. You sound very excited about it, and it was transformative. I want to find out how, because, you know, a bus ride with your family as a teenager is not anything anybody aspires to.
Well,
you did.
Fortunately, it was with a group on base, so it was a group of young people, and it was also how I met my first boyfriend in high school, and so it all worked out.
Well, tell us about what it was about seeing those places, though, that was so transformative for you.
I think it was just that it was the wall was broken down, that it was possible for me and my sisters to experience other languages, other cultures, and that young kids are young kids wherever you go. And we had never traveled internationally before then. Yeah. And since then, I've traveled almost every year to a new country.
What about music at that point? You were a teenager playing viola. Did that play a part then once you got to Belgium? What were you doing there?
Yeah, I got really lucky. My dad went over in advance of our family to kind of find us a home and make sure actually that Karen and I could continue our viola lessons. And my younger sister, Kristen, was really into horses and so found a stable for her.
That's really hard to play too because you got to get...
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, wanted to not follow, you know, in her sister's footsteps as the third child in music. But Dad looked for a violin and viola teacher for Karen and I, and we ended up with Francis Deschamps, who was the principal second violinist of the Belgian National Symphony. And he not only taught privately, but also led a provincial orchestra in our town. We lived in Mons, Belgium. And I was very lucky and had the opportunity to play in the viola section. As soon as I arrived, he put me immediately to work. And I only discovered later that it was an internship for me while it was a full-time job for everybody else.
But that must have been cool, playing out before, you know, in front of a foreign audience.
Oh, it was amazing and allowed us to... I learned French really that way by being totally immersed in orchestra, which of course has its own routine. And so really you can sit in on an orchestra rehearsal anywhere in the world and no matter what language they're speaking, you kind of know what's going on. Most of the language is musical. But it was really... that experience is how I learned French and... also really what allowed me to see that my viola could be the ticket to seeing the world.
What about lifestyle and cultural shock, or was it to get to Belgium? Different lifestyle for you?
Oh, definitely. We lived on a farm, so my family experienced a much slower pace of life, which I loved. I look back on that time with real fondness. It was maybe the closest our nuclear family has ever been, and we biked to school, so it was, you know, but that was 6 or 7 miles.
Do you have a little baguette in your basket?
Sometimes, yeah, with a cigarette hanging on my mouth.
And what? But it's the kind of place you tell the story about, the things that can happen to you there that would never have in Prince George's County, for instance, you know, having things held up by a beet truck.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was often in Europe and in Belgium in particular, I would say, where you would have plans to go somewhere and you would experience firsthand the frustration of the Belgian farm workers. And there was a protest pretty regularly. I'd say almost every weekend you could find either a truckload of sugar beets spilled on the highway or they're holding up the airport traffic because they're not getting equal pay. It was a really interesting place.
You know, given the nature and quantity of social problems we have in this country, I'm thinking maybe loads of sugar beets might be the answer. Just block commerce, and sugar beets will do it.
It might be.
Maybe things are changed. Although it sounds like nothing changed in Belgium, so maybe I'm barking
at least
up the wrong
tree. Nothing changed fast.
And you, in addition to playing in the provincial orchestra, you also then went to an international school on base where you saw people from all over. What was that like?
Yeah, it was amazing. So we were there with Partnership for Peace and NATO families. And I was in a graduating class of 35, and in my class were Americans and Turks and Germans and Norwegians and people from Bosnia, Greeks. It was an incredible experience, yes.
We will take you out of Belgium and into the rest of your career as I continue with our meet today with Katie Wyatt, the co-founder of Kids Notes here in the Triangle, now the executive director of El Sistema USA. Kids Notes works with public schools in the Triangle to recruit children for classical music training. It is modeled after the El Sistema program in Venezuela. We'll continue our conversation after this. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and my guest is Katie Wyatt, co-founder of Kids Notes, and now the executive director of El Sistema USA. Kids Notes is a triangle-based program that works with public schools to recruit children for classical music training, and it is modeled after the El Sistema program in Venezuela. And as executive director of El Sistema USA, Katie helps to support those programs and is now with me again on the State of Things. So we had you in Belgium. You were playing for free in a provincial orchestra. You come back to the United States and decide to attend college at Indiana University. Tell us about that decision.
It was a big one. My mom and I took this amazing trip in February of my senior year, and we drove all over the United States to all the big colleges. So upstate New York, all the way down to Houston, Texas, to look at Rice University. And Indiana really appealed to me because of the mix of an incredible music school and a really respected liberal arts education. Mm-hmm. So
what were
I
you hoping to do?
Both.
Did you want to play in an orchestra? I mean, what were your plans now for a school that would have a good music program?
I have always wanted to do music so I definitely wanted to be able to play at the top level and to be able to explore my interests in politics, in social justice, in history and education.
So you go to Indiana University. How competitive was that?
Very. IU is one of the top music schools in the country. And I, you know, coming from a military family, it was important that I go somewhere that I got a good scholarship.
And you also studied political science, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So now why? And again, I guess you talked about that. You had an interest in social justice and music. Did you have a vision? Did you sort of see yourself and how this all might play out later, or just know vaguely that you wanted to be good at these two things?
I've always been very passionate about the role culture and the arts and our societal expression plays in the way we make decisions. And for me, it's always been right at the surface that I knew that the way to make change is about winning people's hearts over, which is truly about joy and creativity and experimentation and creating something together, more than, you know, a legislative choice or enforcing through law or force. That real change and real progress comes from a society making decisions to move forward together, respecting all people, giving voice to all people, and in my case, what I'm particularly passionate about is the creativity possible in all people.
The play is the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king.
Yeah.
So creativity plays an important part. And you raced bikes in Indiana.
Yeah, that was awesome. I don't know.
Even that was a team sport for you. It wasn't individual. You were
that's
doing
right.
relays, right?
That's right. It was relays. So if anyone who is listening has seen Breaking Away, that's the race. So it's the Little 500 at Indiana University, and I had an awesome time.
And you used a Belgian baguette as the baton.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Exactly.
I won't go back to that.
Exactly.
This is fascinating because there's a little thread that runs through this, the idea of competition, being fiercely competitive, having to win and be a part of something and be the best. best at it in a collaborative environment,
yeah.
whether it's a racing team or an orchestra, being the best that you can be, accomplishing all that you can within the communal context.
Yeah. And for me, it's about work. I love hard work. I love the opportunity to really achieve at something. And in music, and I speak about this a lot in my work with El Sistema, that it's truly about the joy of mastering something, that great pride and a deep understanding of yourself and of the thing, of the art that you're creating, can be such a joyous experience. And the way to capitalize on that is by sharing it with people, that it's not just you mastering your craft, working really hard, but it's you and all these people around you pushing yourselves towards something. And that I think is what made me fall in love with El Sistema.
And the ability to keep all those people together, to keep an orchestra intact and mm-hmm. operating, is a management project.
Yeah, exactly.
And it requires management skill, and that's something you also became interested in, because after Indiana, you went to the Cleveland Institute of Music, right?
That's right. Yeah, and it's actually at CIM, I practiced my butt off. So for 2 years, I got my master's in viola performance. And it was then that I made a choice. While all through undergrad, I was looking at viola and political science and cycling, and I was working, and I was, you know, having a very well-rounded life and into, you know, turning 21. And then at age 22 and 23, I focused on the viola more than I have in my whole life. I really doubled down. I made the decision that I was going to go for it. I was going to try and win a seat in a professional orchestra. So I started taking auditions. I played in the Columbus Symphony in Ohio as a semi-professional musician and a fellowship there, and started taking auditions. And it was there that I won the spot in the New World Symphony in Miami.
New World Symphony in Miami. So where are you? So what does that mean about the Cleveland Institute? Did you go from there
to Miami?
And mm-hmm. then, so what was that like for you to actually win that and be part of an orchestra now? And you've done it. You're a professional musician.
It was a big choice. And one thing that I teach my mentees about, anyone who is interested in following in footsteps similar to mine, is that you will have a lot of choices along the way where you think you're making a choice for the rest of your life, and a couple years later, you might make a new choice and make that for the rest of your life. So while at Cleveland, I had a really amazing opportunity to work for Sandy McDonald, who's now the CEO of the North Carolina Symphony, and she was the director of the marketing department for the Cleveland Orchestra. And it was during that time, working for the Cleveland Orchestra right at the end of my master's degree, when I told Sandy, I hadn't yet heard from the New World Symphony, but I let her know that I had taken this audition and that I would, you know, should I win that spot, because the New World Symphony is this very respected orchestra, that I would have to go. And I found out only a couple months into my time with the Cleveland Orchestra that I had won the spot in the New World Symphony. And because I had devoted those 2 years of practice and, you know, not way beyond 2 years, since the third grade of practice, I wanted to give playing the viola professionally a chance and really see what that might look like. But fortunately, during my time at CIM, I interned with the Cleveland Orchestra and then had this job. And what I learned there was about the quality of work. So the Cleveland Orchestra is one of the best orchestras in the world. And that is seen in both the musicians on stage and in the management of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. And it is truly working at a standard of excellence. And actually, Jim Collins wrote in his book, Good to Great, about the Cleveland Orchestra and modeled it as one of the great companies in the arts.
But that's where you got some management experience.
That's right.
At least in the
first time.
Mm-hmm. And seeing not only the importance of it, but also sort of the difference between, you know, sort of doing it well and doing it not. There you did it, or were working with people who were doing it very well. You get to the New World Symphony and also the Youth Orchestras of America?
Yes. So while at New World, it's a fantastic organization, and it's a pre-professional training orchestra. So while there, you have the chance to audition for summer festivals and tours and international opportunities, and you can kind of go do those and then come back to the New World Symphony. And so while I was there, I won a spot in the Youth Orchestra of the Americas, which is a cultural exchange program between the United States and all of the Americas, so Canada, Mexico, Middle America, and South America. And went to Venezuela for the first time. We rehearsed in Venezuela for 2 weeks and then toured all of Latin America over the period of about 2 to 3 months.
And Venezuela, of course, is the birthplace of El Sistema.
Yes.
How much did you know about El Sistema when you went to Venezuela on this tour?
Nothing. Zero. I knew nothing and was blown away by both the social aspect of El Sistema, what they were accomplishing in terms of progress and access and empowerment for people who wouldn't otherwise have a chance, and also the level of competition. I think it comes right back around to this idea that anyone given a shot can be just as good as anyone else.
Well, you, in fact, got a taste of that competition when you were in Venezuela,
indeed.
Right?
So the story is that I, you know, was really excited to get into YOA, only one of 10 Americans to be able to go. And I get down there, and just like in high school, you audition again for seats, and then you have to go look on the board, on the wall, and like everyone goes, and it's a big crowd of kids and looking at where your seats are. And I played well, as I said, I had made the choice to take professional auditions and really make a go of it. So I was auditioning for like the Detroit Symphony and other orchestras, and I was beat out by a 16-year-old girl.
And you were like 21, 22?
I was 25.
25.
Yeah. And so it was, the youth is liberally used in that.
Meaning just not old.
Yeah, not old. So I was in the top range of the age range for the orchestra. And Joanna, I thought, was like a Venezuelan diplomat's daughter or, you know.
The girl who beat you up.
Yes, yeah. So I thought that she had, you know, way more experiences than me or way more opportunities than me to get special private lessons since she was in kindergarten and, you know, all the way through. But come to find out, she grew up in El Sistema and her parents were making ends meet. They were selling coconut water is what they did on the side of the road in Caracas, Venezuela.
So you learned that a 16-year-old girl whose parents sold coconut water had beaten you out for first chair in viola in the Youth Orchestra of Americas, and again, we're surprised at her background. So tell us more about El Sistema, how it got started, and a little bit more about the theory behind it.
The legend is that a man, Maestro Jose Antonio Abreu, started El Sistema with 12 kids in a parking garage in Caracas. And I'm absolutely sure that there is both truth and fantasy in that in that story. And it has grown since the 1970s from just a few youth, truly, to now be serving, you know, millions of children since its inception in Venezuela and also millions of children worldwide.
Tell us more about his vision and how he built that program, whether it started in a garage or not.
Maestro Abreu was very angry about the fact that Venezuelans, native Venezuelans, had very few opportunities in the highest cultural circles in Venezuela and wanted to see more naturally born Venezuelans in the orchestras, in youth orchestras, in early conservatory programs, all the way through to professional orchestras, because at that time it was almost all exclusively Europeans. It was almost all, affluent white people in Venezuela. And Maestro Abreu is Venezuelan, had grown up with a very rich music background as a pianist and composer and conductor, and wanted to see that background grow and bloom and to see the same opportunities he was afforded, you know, through his parents' relationships to be for all people in Venezuela.
So he does, and he creates his program. Now, it's a kind of, you said it couldn't be done, because now he's going to say, yeah, I think we can do it. Kids from any background, we can bring them in. And he has to convince other people that to share this vision so that he can afford it.
Yeah.
And now it's gotten how many? I don't know what the numbers are of kids who are involved in this thing.
Yeah, it's hundreds of thousands annually in Venezuela, and then since its inception in the 70s, millions over time.
And they're not just fiddling; they're actually beating out Katie Wyatt for first chair,
among other people.
So let's get a sample, because I know that you played with them, or not with the youth orchestra, which included all of these kids from all the Americas. Did you have a sense then that this was El Sistema? Once you figured out what was happening and learned more about it, were you sort of attached at the moment, or did it take you a while to come back to?
It took a while. Yeah. So I would say I had this life-changing experience in 2005. Being introduced to it helped me realize that I no longer just wanted to take professional auditions. I wanted to return to my life of viola and came back to the United States, called my parents, called my teacher at the time, Bob Vernon, who was the principal of viola of the Cleveland Orchestra, and let them know that I wanted to start looking at management programs. And I was very afraid that I was disappointing them. Everyone, including myself, had put in a lot of time. My parents had driven me to I don't know how many auditions and camps and lessons. And I had spent, well over 10,000 hours practicing the viola, and called my teacher in tears and just said, I have to let you know I'm not happy just playing the viola. I really want to do something more with my life. And I would love to build programs that I think make big strides in social justice and in access and empowering all people. I was very passionate about equity and also about the talent and potential that's out there that is just untapped and just looking for it to be invited to play,
Well, just to give you a sense of how this has had an impact on music in Venezuela and where this program began, I'm going to play a song called Tico Tico, which, is an orchestral piece, but doesn't sound like classic European music. So before I play it, maybe you can give us a sense of a little bit of context around this piece.
Sure. I picked Tico Tico because it's definitely not your traditional classical piece. It's based in Latin folk music, but it also is the piece that we performed as the encore in the Youth Orchestra of the Americas in each of the cities where we toured. And our first city where we played this was in Buenos Aires at the Teatro Colón, which is a very famous, very fancy concert hall. And we jumped off the stage into the audience and danced
to this. Moving, Tico Tico, a little bit of that piece performed by the Youth Orchestra of, was that the Youth? That might have been the Youth Orchestra of Caracas, I think.
Could
that,
be, yep.
That we heard, but you played it when you were in the Youth Orchestra of the Americas, touring all around. I'm talking with Katie Wyatt, who is now the Executive Director of El Sistema USA. You also performed with conductor of the Venezuelan conductor, Gustavo Dudamel.
That's right.
Tell us about him. He's important to this story as well.
Sure. He and I are the same age, and really had a great time when we met each other. It was we had hung out with a group of friends for the summer and had a really fun time. And he and some of his friends, we became close and kept in touch over the years. But I had the pleasure of meeting Gustavo really before he got famous. So he was with his first wife at the time. And just really had the future in front of him. And he had a fire and a curiosity and a playfulness in conductors that you don't often see.
He's well known now, certainly in those circles. But he came up through El Sistema, right?
He did, yeah. He played violin and played violin all through the El Sistema system. And is from Montalban.
And again, what was it like? I mean, just the experience of being connected with someone who's that experienced and that good in music, that had to be important to you.
It was incredible. And I have to say what was interesting was that at the time, yes, his experience was rich, but also he had a lot of raw talent that just needed a chance. And so I would say actually we had the same schooling, you know, we were the same age, we were at similar points in life, and he was invited to conduct this orchestra as one of his early opportunities in conducting, and just having that is something in the El Sistema philosophy that I think is really important, which is giving opportunities to youth that you wouldn't think they're ready for, and really just inviting a young person to lead before they have all the traditional skills or the traditional experience in place, and to see how they blossom and flourish. Because obviously, everyone will only rise to the expectation that you set for them. And so if you set it quite high and give them a chance, young people especially will, you know, aspire to the top.
Katie Wyatt knows a thing or two about that. She is the newly named executive director of El Sistema USA. She was once the executive director of Kids Notes in the Triangle in North Carolina. That's can be in many ways associated with El Sistema. We're going to talk more with Katie about El Sistema, Kids Notes, kids in music, and her career on the State of Things. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. My guest is Katie Wyatt, co-founder of Kids Notes, now the executive director of El Sistema USA. Kids Notes is a triangle-based program that works with public schools to recruit kids for classical music training, and it's modeled after El Sistema, a program that began in Venezuela, is now all over the world, and its USA director is Katie Wyatt. So we had you in Latin America. We had you losing first chair to a young musician who had come up through that program. Now let's get you back to the U.S. You were performing there with the Youth Orchestra of the Americas, and you come back to your desire to get some management training and end up in New England. Tell us about that.
So actually, before New England, I got my first job. So that's what brought me to North Carolina in the first place. So my very first job in management was as director of education for the North Carolina Symphony, and spent 2 years learning about the incredible education mission of our symphony in the state, and then won a fellowship through the TED Prize. So Jose Abreu, the founder of El Sistema, won the 2009 TED Prize. And with his award, created a fellowship for 50 young musicians to go to Venezuela, 10 per year over 5 years, to be immersed in El Sistema, to then bring it back to the United States and set up El Sistema-inspired programs all over the country. And I leapt at that chance to return to Venezuela after having been there just on tour, essentially, where it was one day here, one day there, to really go back and be immersed in the curriculum and operations and strategy of El Sistema.
And it's interesting that you would work with the North Carolina Symphony, because that is a symphony orchestra that was designed from the start to be a public orchestra.
Absolutely.
For the state of North Carolina, really one of the first in the nation to be organized as it was, with education as its mission. We're going to go all around this state, and we're going to talk about classical music, orchestral music in a southern state. So all of that was unusual at the founding. And so for that reason, it must have had a very different culture.
And it was very attractive to me. So I have to say most of the friends that I've made in North Carolina were because when I would walk into a bar or a restaurant, you know, being new in the Triangle, I would say, oh, I'm Katie, I work for the North Carolina Symphony. And they would immediately tell me about the time that they saw the symphony in their school or in their gym in whatever small town of North Carolina in the fourth grade.
Great stuff. So you do that, and then you do get this fellowship. So tell us about the fellowship then.
So the Abreu Fellows Program, hence renamed the Sistema Fellows Program, was at the New England Conservatory for several years, five years, and created 50 fellows that then each in their class of 10 went to Venezuela, and also took courses at NEC for a year and spent 3 months in country learning about the ins and outs of the El Sistema network, the curriculum plan, and how to think about applying the philosophy of El Sistema to existing programs in the United States or to new programs that they would start.
But you did that. And before that, even, you took you had a management fellow program with the League of American Orchestras, right?
That's right. So that was my bridge between being a violist, a professional violist in the New World Symphony, and then my first job with the North Carolina Symphony. So I took a year. Again, it was about being introduced to a high, high quality administrative thinking and strategic thinking in the arts. And one of the best experiences for me that year, so this was 2006, was with the Chicago Symphony. So I was placed with the Chicago Symphony as my final executive placement during that fellowship.
And along the way, connected with Yo-Yo Ma.
Yes. So I had the best timing. It's something my family jokes a little bit about, which is that I take a lot of risks, but I have almost always landed on my feet so far, knock on wood. And my timing at the Chicago Symphony could not have been better. So they were launching their very first record label, and I helped produce the very first record of the Chicago Symphony as one of my intern projects. And then also they were launching their very first year of the Silk Road Project's residency and announcing Yo-Yo Ma as a special advisor, artistic advisor to the Chicago Symphony. And so it was my job to drive Yo-Yo around and to make sure that he had a great time and to make sure that he stayed on schedule and he and his Silk Road colleagues had, you know, everything that they needed in order to do their work.
Let's play a little clip of Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble performing Arabian Waltz. Clip of Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble performing the piece Arabian Waltz. My guest is Katie Wyatt. She's co-founder of the triangle-based program Kids Notes. She has moved on to become the executive director of El Sistema USA. So, you know, you're the intern driving him around. Yeah. He's Yo-Yo Ma. Did he pay any attention? What's it like? What's he like?
Sure. So I have had the great fortune to be able to work with Yo-Yo in several stages of my life. So I met him for the first time in Chicago. Then he was an advisor to the Abreu Fellows Program in Boston. He lives in Boston. So worked with him again during our time in our fellowship program. And then now I've been named a Kennedy Center Citizen Artist this year. And he is full circle special advisor to the Kennedy Center Citizen Artist Fellows. And I'll be working with him again. He is very passionate about El Sistema. Also, he has performed in Venezuela, knows Gustavo Dudamel, knows Maestro Abreu well, and is very interested in the social justice and equity work of the El Sistema program.
And what's he like to work with when you're...
He's inspiring. Yeah. I would say he's a lot like you, Frank. He's the genius, you know. Can't keep up with him.
Yeah, me and Yo, we're like this. I know you call him Yo-Yo. We're close enough. I call him Yo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's he's a lot of fun, and he has a million ideas a minute. Wow. And also, one thing that I think attracts people to him is that he will speak with anyone, and truly is interested in what you have to say and what you think and what your ideas are. And that includes the people who are serving him lunch and parking his car and carrying his cello and everyone else.
It's so interesting to hear this because I just finished a piece in The New Yorker this week about Arturo Toscanini.
Oh,
and
cool.
I had no idea that his history was such that he had sort of, you know, he's on the NBC, he's playing with the NBC Orchestra. He's popular. Americans are listening to classical music or orchestral music on the radio. But there's a critique, and the critique is actually from the left, that somehow you're commodifying this, that you're turning it into commercial, you know, bourgeois dreck. And it's Toscanini, for God's sake, and people are listening to the music. And so this whole question, and it's not only orchestral music, it's hip-hop as well. It's like, when is it authentic? When is it commercial?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't this just belong to all of us? Can't we just listen?
That's how I feel. That's why I chose the pieces that I chose. Yeah. I mean, certainly music is about, it takes everybody, right? It's not just a personal experience. It takes also a listener. And I think it's that communication that I love about the art form. I mean, for me, as I've shared, it's such a social thing. And I've just never ascribed to art for art's sake, where it's, you know, the projects that are, you know, meant to only be heard by the artist and, you know, are very kind of navel-gazing, I think. But for me, it's a communal invitation to creativity.
Creativity of all kinds. You decided to, you were down here in North Carolina and became involved in musical communities outside the orchestra. For example, you played in Lost in the Trees.
Yeah, so I chose one of the pieces for us to listen to today because I think it's really neat the way that classical music has reemerged in popular music. So it's in hip-hop, it's in electronic music, it's in indie rock, it's in folk. And it's making a comeback. And I think if the classical music world can continue to embrace the way that instrumentation and multiple uses of traditionally classic instruments could be a way to honestly save the orchestra world, I mean, which continues to suffer from the perspective of elitism and a bias towards, you know, it not being for everyone. And it's changing in popular music, which is why I picked Lost in the Trees.
In this way, here you are, the song, A Song for the Painter, Lost in the Trees, featuring Katie Wyatt on viola.
Both of her hands, and the song is for the wanderer who never came home again. And for all those with broken hearts, I know what you're going through. I had a true love once, but now they've gone and left me blue. So now I'd like to swim.
A little bit of Song for the Painter by the indie folk band Lost in the Trees, featuring viola from my guest, Katie Wyatt, now the executive director of El Sistema USA. So talk about Kids Notes and how that got here, because really that came here by your talent, but also the persistence of one Grandma Poe.
Indeed. So that, I think, is another... I've had moments in my life where the path just unfolds in front of me, and this was certainly one of them. So I had won the fellowship through TED to start the Abreu Fellows Program, but it was 2009, and it was a really scary time for a lot of people, and a number of my friends had lost their jobs. We at the symphony had taken serious pay cuts, and I was nervous to return after having my very first full-time job ever. To return to a fellowship, which was essentially another student year. And I called the New England Conservatory and I said, you know, I'm really on the fence. And they said, well, there's this woman, she's been calling us every day saying that we need to have a fellow in Durham and that we needed to start an El Sistema program in Durham. And if, gosh darn it, if they could do it in Venezuela, well, certainly we could do it here in Durham. And that was the incredible Miss Lucia Poe, who they then said, you know, in Boston, they said, she says she lives in Durham and you're in Raleigh. I think that's near each other. Could you guys have
She'll draw
coffee?
On the map and
yeah,
walk
no,
it up there.
I know, no
Because I want you to know, Kitty, she has called me every day to tell me you got a new job and I need to have you on this radio show.
Oh, good. Well, we'll be sure and get her a copy of this program.
She's an amazing force
then.
Of nature
yes,
herself.
She is.
And we have met her on this program, so we have spoken with Lucia Poe. Kids Notes does come here. Tell us briefly about that and sort of how many kids you serve, because we're running out of time now, but I do want to highlight what Kids Notes has done here just in this area.
So Lucia and I spent that fellowship year raising a little bit of seed money through coffees and teas at her home. We raised about $25,000 from people. And I launched Kids Notes. And in our very first year, we had a budget of $150,000 and served 60 kids. And then with the incredible support from the community, including WUNC and the American Tobacco Campus and the Goodmans and so many in the Triangle, I just can't even name them all, but very, very embraced by incredible people. Kids Notes grew from 60 kids to over 500 kids annually this year and a budget of over $1 million.
Kids Notes, an offshoot of El Sistema. You are now the executive director of El Sistema, and you've essentially brought headquarters here to Durham.
That's
what does
right.
that mean for North Carolina now that the boss is here?
Yeah, so we are thrilled to be in partnership with Duke University. I'll be working as a partner in the Social Sciences Research Institute and the Office of the Vice Provost for the Arts at Duke, and bringing the incredible network of El Sistema USA. We have 120 inspired programs across the country, all different, all adopting the motto and philosophy of El Sistema, but all unique to their own communities. It's growing every year, and our idea is to really continue to build the program from the nascent stage of a national movement now to one that has significant political teeth.
Sounds good. And it seems to me that you, both the international movement and the American movement, could learn a lot. I mean, do you spend time, you talked about the unique quality of each of those inspired programs. And then I suspect that you learn something from that and that feeds back into the whole system.
Definitely. Something that I think is very interesting about America versus the other El Sistema programs internationally is that most El Sistema nationwide systems across the world are government funded. So they start from the top down and have started with an official partnership with the government of Venezuela. And then, you know, working with the cultural arm, usually, because there's usually a Department of Culture.
Yeah, we don't have any of that.
No.
Government funding or
don't.
Culture arm.
But I think what's interesting about what we do have are 120 entrepreneurs across the country who have totally created something from nothing and have built a program up by their bootstraps in the American way, who now want to come together and share best practices and really grow our movement.
All right. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt to get a little help from the government.
It wouldn't hurt.
I'm just saying.
Certainly wouldn't.
Kitty Wyatt is co-founder of Kids Notes and the executive director of El Sistema USA. Kids Notes is here in the Triangle. It works with public schools to recruit children for classical music. It is inspired by El Sistema. Kitty Wyatt, now the director of the El Sistema USA. And you can find out more about Katie and her programs at our website, stateofthings.org. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, a program produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.